last week, I heard a man talking about his childhood. He said, I was watching TV, and I saw this commercial, and it said, if you're having a problem with your mama whipping you, call this 800 number. So I called the number. My mama answered the phone. So we laugh, but you know, underneath that joke, I think that we have some tears. You feel it? You know, the sadness of child abuse and neglect. Almost all of us have been touched by that in some way. Maybe we've experienced it in our own lives, or we've witnessed it and wish that we could do something about it. How many of you have been in one of those positions? Can I see your hands? Seriously. So today I want to share a little bit about my experience with child abuse. So before I go any further, just to kind of frame this message, for those of you who don't know the connection practice, it's a combination of empathy and insight that empowers you to meet any challenge coming your way in life. So in talking to you over the years, one of the stories I know I must have shared is that when I was 10 years old, I was walking down the country road in front of my home in Missouri, and I had this experience where I saw this lovely sunset, and my heart filled up, and my inner voice said, and you will work for peace. That's been my North Star. So I've shared that many times over the years, and that's the thing that's worked in my life, is to work for peace. You know, eventually I created the connection practice as my way of working for peace. Everybody has their own way of showing up for peace, and the connection practice became my way. But in all the years that I talked about connection and developed this practice, I never called connection a movement. But you're going to hear me later in this message introduce the idea of connection as a movement. And I'll be telling you why. So I didn't think of it before. I didn't refer to connection as a movement. And I've got connection practice trainers here in the room, and they're just hearing this out of my mouth for the first time. I didn't ever really do that because I wasn't ready for that. Because I had not yet become conscious of the power of the abuse in my childhood. I'd always talked about the upside, this beautiful message coming through my heart to work for peace. I'd never talked about the other side of my life, which wasn't a complete disaster, let's say. I'm not saying that I had a tremendous amount of abuse. But my mom had a lot of pain, a lot of unresolved pain. And for a lot of the time, she was a good mom, and sometimes she was a great mom. But at times, her pain came out at me as abuse, mostly emotional abuse, very little physical abuse, but pretty rough emotional abuse. So because of that abuse, I was really desperate for my mom's love. And I wanted it so badly that one day when she picked me up from school, I had a little cold. So when I got in the car, I was coughing a little bit, and my mom noticed. And so I thought, wow, she noticed. Well, let's just exaggerate that cough. So I coughed harder. I coughed until I threw up. And that really got her attention. And so I thought, wow, this is really working out. And so I kept doing it. I kept coughing until I'd throw up over and over and over again. Then suddenly I found myself in the hospital. How'd this happen? Well, I knew, but they didn't. You know, they could not figure out what was going on. So I just stopped doing it. It scared me so much that I stopped. And I just was discharged and went home. But the emotional abuse continued, and I decided to try a different strategy, rebelling. So I started talking back at my mom. That didn't go over so well. Yeah, I became a problem, more of a problem to her than I had been. So she took me to a counselor to straighten me out. So when we went to the counselor, he talked with us separately. And after doing that, he took me aside and he said, "You know, you seem mature for your age, but your mom is in a lot of emotional pain. And I'm just wondering if you could be more compassionate with her." "Okay," I said. "Okay." So I became more compassionate with my mom. I can't say it was a truly authentic compassion, but I became more compassionate by stuffing my feelings and needs, my own feelings and needs. And so on the surface, it looked like I'd improved my behavior. I was a good girl now. But stuffing my feelings and needs took quite a toll on my life. You know, stuffing your feelings and needs disconnects you from yourself. Anybody else notice that? So I turned into a big pleaser. You know, so much so that I was actually kind of robotic at times. I remember I went into a grocery store as an adult with a friend, and he said to me, "What's wrong with you? You know, why are you so shut down?" And then I realized that when I went into a grocery store as a kid, that I just kind of went into robot mode waiting for mom's orders. Go get that, go get that, keep your mouth shut, and just do what you're told. And so when I'd walked in that grocery store, I guess I just went into that scared little girl again, waiting for orders from my friend. So when I looked at it, I could see it was a very odd behavior for an adult, and that I needed to wake up and really get conscious when I walk in a grocery store so that that simple act wouldn't trigger me into this old behavior anymore. So it's true that my inner voice caused me to live a life of peace, working for peace. But what I didn't realize, friends, until just recently, is that that pain of that emotional abuse was also driving me to create a life of peace. You see what I'm saying? The light and the dark driving me to create a way to peace, a practical way to live in peace here, to live in peace here. So in all those years, I didn't realize this pain was contributing to my passion for peace. So you might wonder, what was it, Rita Marie, that woke you up to that? What was it that made me realize this was an important part of that drive? Well, it was a very stirring TED Talk from a woman named Nadine Burke Harris. Anybody heard of her? She's a pediatrician from Berkeley, and she did a TED Talk on something called ACEs. ACEs stand for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And she moved me so with this TED Talk. She talked about this Dr. Vince Ferrati, who originally did the study on ACEs back in the 90s. And he did a questionnaire with 17,500 people. This is it. 10 questions about what happened in your childhood. So let's just look at some of these questions. Did a parent or other adult in your household physically abuse you? emotionally abuse you, sexually abuse you, go to prison? Was your mother ever hit? Did you often go hungry? Were your parents divorced, or did they engage in substance abuse? After asking all these people these questions, they found that 67% of the people had at least one ACE, at least one of these. They found that 1 in 8 had 4 or more ACEs. 1 in 8. Think about that in this room, friends. Is there one person in 8 of us that had a really tough childhood? Probably so. They also found then that when they linked this study with adult disease, that people with high ACEs scores had triple the risk of heart disease and cancer. And even more significant to me is that they had a decrease in life expectancy of 20 years. 20 years off their life because of that difficult childhood. So the higher the ACE score, the worse the health outcomes. Think about it. Think about how that ripples out into our society. The cost on all levels of that. The cost to our health and the financial cost. Look at the economic cost of having this kind of child abuse and neglect going on in our world. So Nadine concluded that ACEs are the greatest unaddressed public health threat in our time. That makes sense to you now after thinking about this? But the good news, friends, the good news is Governor Newsom just appointed Nadine as the first ever Surgeon General of California. This just happened in January, and she's going to use this post to crusade to stop ACEs. So, this is a hot topic, friends. It's something that's really becoming known. You know, when I talk to people, oh yeah, I've heard of ACEs. Is there anybody here that had heard of this, ACEs? Yeah, I see a few. Okay. So, because of Nadine's TED Talk, I began to look more closely at my ACEs. I had explored them somewhat. I had talked to people about what I'd experienced in my childhood, so it wasn't that I'd completely been unconscious about it. But at the same time, something about Nadine revealing all these facts made me take another look. And so now I fully own them. I fully owned that I had emotional abuse in my childhood. But what I realized is that because of creating the connection practice, even though I hadn't named it, I never thought of myself as being abused. I never thought of myself as an at-risk kid. And I was. But because of doing the connection practice, I've been healing it all along. You see? I didn't even have to admit it, but I've still been healing it. So I no longer stuff my feelings and needs. I think the people who know me would agree with that. And it's not that I blast people either. You know, this is the pattern that we've learned to stuff or blah, right? What if we learned to masterfully manage, right? So we can be our best selves. So now, when I have a negative feeling, or I have a little tension with somebody in my life, or feel like there's going to be a conflict, something's going on, I go immediately to my refrigerator. Not to eat compulsively, which I can also do pretty well. I'm getting better at that, though, because of the connection practice, I have to say. Anyway, I go to my refrigerator because I have these boards now on my refrigerator. So let's say, you know, I get a little frustrated, something happens, even something as simple as technology being a big problem during my day. Anybody relate to that? Yeah. Yeah. Or let's say that somebody, you know, I depended on somebody to keep an agreement. Maybe they didn't pay me back or something like that. I'm just saying this off the top of my head. Let's just say that somebody disappointed me. And so I go to my refrigerator and I go, yeah, I got this negative feeling. I'm feeling frustrated. I'm feeling resentful. And I'm feeling kind of hurt. You know, I really trusted this person. And what are my needs? Well, I need fairness. I need honesty. I need respect. Okay. And of those, which is my main need? Well, let's say fairness. Okay. And then I would go on to guess what this person was feeling and needing. That's the empathy piece. The first piece is self-empathy. Second piece is empathy for the other. So I'm right away nailing it, friends. You get it? I'm addressing it. I'm opening my heart to the other person. Then I move into coherence. How many of you know what coherence is in this congregation? Almost everybody knows, because this is how we get in sync, how we can really get in touch with our highest and best intelligence, which is spirit. So I move into coherence, and I ask, what do I need to know about this situation with this person that didn't pay me back as agreed? Listen inside. Get an insight. You see? Instead of spending 10 years thinking about how this person did me wrong, I can get cleaned out 5 minutes. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Somebody in the first service said, cool. Yeah, cool. So now, you know, I, like I said, use the boards on the refrigerator. And if my partner Ricardo here and I have any tension come up, we just pull those boards right off the refrigerator, put them on the dining room table, boom, 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 boom. Wouldn't it be great to evolve faster, friends? Not only heal from our childhoods, but just evolve faster. Get better and better at transforming whatever comes our way. So now when I go to coach somebody using the connection practice, I put the boards in front of us and I take them through it. And when we're done, they can do it themselves, because it's self-empowering, you see. Every step is self-empowering. Nobody's telling that person what to do, how to feel, what they need. It's completely self-empowered. Getting to self-empathy, empathy, and the creativity of spirit, our insights. So when Nadine closed her TED Talk, one of the things that she said is that she'd had a big learning about the fact that she thought everybody was going to be enthusiastically jumping on the bandwagon of stopping ACEs, and gosh, they didn't. She's been talking all over the country, you know, wanting people to get behind it with their money, with their programs and everything, and she was really deeply disappointed. So don't you think that that happens because people think, this problem is so big, it's been with us forever, and it's just really not resolvable. You know, we just kind of have to settle for the fact that, you know, child abuse and neglect is always going to go on. And Nadine doesn't think that. You know, she's working to have early screening for ACEs of all children to try to prevent further harm. But the problem is pretty overwhelming. You know, I talked to guidance counselors at a big conference for guidance counselors on student mental wellness in Sacramento in January. And the guidance counselors tell me that the numbers of at-risk kids are increasing. And there's no way there's ever going to be enough counselors for all of them, to help all of them. They try, you know, one by one, they're helping kids. But they're completely overwhelmed and they don't see an answer in sight. And again, it's just like, ugh, helpless, overwhelmed. This is just too big a problem. We can't solve it. But what if we really faced where the problem begins? Isn't it that we have to heal the aces of the parents' childhoods? Yeah. Right? Isn't that where we have to start? I mean, we can screen, and I'm all for that, and I stand fully with Nadine on whatever we can do to put a stop to aces. But what we really have to do is heal it in us adults. Isn't that right? Then we won't be passing this generational pain on to kids. So the most practical answer that I've ever found in all my years of working for peace, consciously and unconsciously, is the connection practice boards in the home. Just imagine if we taught every kid how to manage their inner lives, how to get to that empathy, how to get to that insight, how to resolve a conflict in a conscious way instead of, or, right? Right there in the home. Because in my experience, we need something that is visual and tactile in front of our faces so that we know what to do instead of slipping back into the old stuff. Does that make sense to you? All right, so we know this connection practice is scientifically based, but it's also spiritually profound. Really what we're teaching, friends, is how to live from the intersection of your wisdom and compassion. I teach it to secular audiences as empathy and insight. Empathy equals compassion, insight equals wisdom. What we're teaching families, friends, is how to live from the intersection of wisdom and compassion in us, two of our greatest strengths. That's what's going to be the how-to that will replace this and this. Don't we need that? We need to know exactly what to do when we have emotional upsets in the home or actually at work or anywhere. But we're focusing in on the home. Now, one of the steps of the connection practice is coherence, as I mentioned. And wouldn't it be something if we could just teach the world coherence? Yes. So I want to give you an example of that. When I was teaching the connection practice at a peace conference in Vancouver, I was teaching using the M-Wave software where you have to put a little sensor on your ear, and then the coherence wave shows up on the screen, and the software measures your coherence. And so I asked for a volunteer to come up to put that sensor on the ear. So this woman named Sandy comes up, and I put the sensor on her ear. And the first thing I do when I'm doing this demonstration is I try to stress the person out so we can, yeah, I know it's kind of cruel, but I try to stress them so that we can see the difference, you see, between the stress wave and the coherent wave. Okay, so I try to stress her out by asking her to count backwards from 100 by 8, subtracting. Yeah, so, you know, she kind of struggled with the subtraction, but she did not move off of high coherence. She was in high coherence. You know, the software measures if you're in low, medium, or high. She was in high coherence the entire time. 100% on the graph, high coherence. So, you know, this is very unusual because when you are up there in front of 50 people in this workshop, your whole inner life is out there on the screen. For all these people, you don't know them, and they're all seeing right inside you. And so usually people don't do well. You know, they usually are stressed. So anyway, I asked Sandy at the end of the workshop how in the world she was able to stay in high coherence without ever having learned it. You know, she didn't know heart math. And she said, well, I came from a very dysfunctional family. I was battered. I was left in the closet in the dark without food and water for long periods of time. But when I was in the closet, somehow I stumbled onto what you're teaching. I stumbled on that feeling, being able to stay in coherence. And once I discovered it, I held on to it for dear life. That was how I survived. And that's how I'm a happy, healthy adult today. Right? Doesn't that give us hope? Instead of settling for adverse childhood experiences? So I shared that example once with a psychologist, and he said, oh, that couldn't be. That's not how it works. I said, well, I witnessed it, you know. But we know it works, don't we? We know it works because we know when we get coherent, we get to spirit. We get ourselves out of the way when we get coherent. And we are in that spiritual energy. And what happens when we're in that energy, friends, is we get healed. Isn't that right? So this young person healed herself in the closet over and over and over again in her childhood. She had to heal herself by tapping into spirit. So we know that many people do overcome childhood adverse experiences, ACEs, by getting really in touch with their spiritual identity. That the childhood experiences were just temporary. That's not their real identity. Isn't that right? So don't we live that, friends, here in Unity? Isn't that what we're all about, is living from our spiritual identity? And we know there's all kinds of therapies and spiritual methods that help us to heal. Connection practice is not the only one. But what I have found is that I need it in front of my face to escalate my growth, to heal from the emotional abuse of my past, and to keep going strong. I love having it in front of my face. It is just so efficient and so liberating that I'm cleaning myself out continually of any negative feeling that comes along. So it's quite fabulous, I have to say. It is really fabulous. Because the boards, friends, you see, bring this huge challenge of ACEs down to size, into something that parents can actually know how to do exactly to live connected. To live connected instead of disconnected. I had an example not too long ago. I had a woman come to me. She was in a heck of a mess. Emotional, legal, financial. She thought a government employee was out to get her. So had this great big problem. We sat down at the table, had the boards there, and she did her own feelings and needs. Her main need was emotional safety. This guy had scared her by coming into her life. Then she guessed his feelings and needs. It was a big aha that she guessed his main need was respect. Oh, then she goes into coherence and she asks, what do I need to know about this? She gets an insight. Oh, I see it now. I never once gave him respect. The moment he came into my life, I was so scared, I just pushed him away. I didn't do what he asked me to do, and I just have never shown him respect. And so what came to me in coherence is, I think I can just make a phone call and just tell him how, you know, I got scared and I'm so sorry that I wasn't respectful, and that I'm willing to start over and tell me what to do, and I'm willing to talk about that and see what we need to do here. You see? I keep getting amazed by it myself, I have to tell you. It just takes me to awe continually. So friends, returning to ACEs. ACEs are an internal disconnect and an external disconnect. Isn't that right? We're disconnected from our best self. And so to reverse that disconnection, we need connection to be a movement. We need to make connection a movement, because we need to raise the awareness, and we need to teach people exactly what to do. a movement that not only inspires hope, but delivers on it, delivers on that hope. We can't have false hope anymore, right? We need something that's actually going to deliver. Not that there's nothing else that delivers. Please don't think I'm implying that. But we need something that works consistently, efficiently, moves us forward with greater ease and speed. So, friends, I know that we can deliver this kind of movement. I know that we can change generational pain into generational peace. I know because now I have authentic connection with my mom, authentic compassion for my mom, authentic compassion, not something that was stuffed down and forced. You know what I'm saying? That's not really compassion. But I have authentic compassion. I turned generational pain into generational peace, and I know that every human being can do that. And I want to see parents and grandparents everywhere learning how to do this, teaching it to the children, so that we can have a generation that knows how to manage their inner lives, and then they'll really change the world. So I'm 100% committed to leading the connection movement and putting a stop to ACEs. But I'm not the only one leading. We've got connection practice trainers like Carolyn here working with children and parents to teach them how to create harmony at home, put a stop to those adverse childhood experiences. So every person who learns the connection practice can be a leader because they can pass it on to the next person. It's easy to lead when you know what to do. So I'm just curious, on a scale of 1 to 10, how committed you are. I'm guessing you're all 10s, but I don't want to assume anything. So I'm just curious, how many of you are 10s in terms of your commitment to living that oneness as actualized connection? Can I see? Are you a 10? Committed to living out of that oneness in a very grounded, reliable, consistent, embodied way. So you see all those 10s out there? I thank God for you. So friends, we can create a world without ACEs. Isn't that right? We can bring this big thing down to size. We can ground it in a tactile daily habit. Thank you. Thank you so much.